It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. This morning, returning to old traditions in the time of the novel coronavirus.
It looks like hard milk.
Hard milk.
Hard milk.
Well, it'll be yummy once you mix it all.
Yummy!
And we'll hear how one clinic that serves some of West Virginia's most vulnerable is adapting to the crisis. But first, spring has sprung. This is West Virginia Morning. Wildflowers and trees are starting to bud and show their green. But are they in sync? The Allegheny Front's Kara Holsoppel headed out before the coronavirus shutdown with researchers who are studying the impact of climate change on the timing of nature.
Spring is one of Mason Heberling's favorite times of year.
But also as a researcher studying it, so much stuff is happening right now. It keeps us up at night. Oh, I meant to look at that plant. Oh, no.
Heberling is the assistant curator of botany at the Carnegie Museum of Natural History in Pittsburgh. Right now, he and Sarah Kibbing, an assistant professor in the Department of Biological Sciences at the University of Pittsburgh, are at the beginning of a 3-year research project looking at the impacts of climate change and invasive plants on the phenology of trees and wildflowers.
Should we find that spring beauty and see if it's doing anything?
Phenology is the study of biological or seasonal events that occur year to year, which create a series of synced events, like when migratory birds return in the spring and eat the insects that have emerged, or a certain wildflower blooms when its pollinators are active. Kibbing and Heberling are hunched over, moving wet brown leaves to the side and looking for signs of the ephemeral spring beauty, Claytonia virginica, that will eventually cover this hillside in tiny blooms here at Beechwood Farms Nature Reserve outside of Pittsburgh. Then the wildflowers will quickly disappear. Ephemeral.
This is going to bother me, so let's walk over there. I know that it's there.
In his previous work with researchers at Boston University, Heberling and colleagues found that in warmer springs, the leaves of plants and trees come out earlier. What surprised them is that trees in the study were leafing out a week earlier than wildflowers, creating a phenological mismatch.
There we are.
It could probably easily be mistaken for grass, but these are actually just the tiny leaves of the Claytonia poking out.
We're not sure exactly how much this mismatch of the overstory leafing out really, really early might affect a plant like this. It would need to be pretty early, we think.
Because spring beauties bloom and are gone so early in the spring. But other wildflower species that bloom later and longer might be shaded out by trees. One theory is that in early spring, when temperatures can fluctuate, trees way up high are sensing the temperature differently than wildflowers on the forest floor. Non-native shrubs that tend to leaf out earlier than native varieties are also a factor. That's Kibbing's specialty.
Some of the first green leafing things you see a couple feet in the air in forest tend to be non-natives.
She says the plant and animal species respond to different temperature and light cues, which signal seasonal changes, or even to the Earth's gravitational shifts. Global warming is changing the behavior of some of the species that rely on temperature cues.
But species that don't make their decisions based only or solely on temperature cues are maybe not changing as quickly.
Kibbing and Heberling will experiment with plots of wildflowers they've planted here, taking them back to the lab and artificially shading them to simulate possible scenarios. And they'll incorporate data from other local sites and the museum's historical botany collection to find out what's been happening with the timing of wildflowers and forest ecosystems over the decades.
The changing of the timing of when these plants are flowering and fruiting affects who eats their seeds. It affects their pollinators. I think there could be a lot of potentially cascading effects as things are all shifting and moving and responding to these changes in climate, which are happening really rapidly.
Heberling says learning about these non-woody plants in the forest ecosystem is also important to preserving biodiversity.
Because there are far more wildflowers than there are trees.
Heberling says though spring continues, the short-term future of their research is a little uncertain due to the precautions the museum and university are taking because of coronavirus. Right now, they're working from home and taking over some of the observational research from grad students, but they're hoping to be able to continue their shading experiments later this spring. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Kara Holsoppel.
For weeks now, many West Virginians have been sheltering at home. Either out of necessity or just to pass the time, some are turning back to traditional Appalachian practices, things like gardening, sewing, and baking. With school shut down, one mother in the Eastern Panhandle has found herself homeschooling her daughters and incorporating some traditions into the day. Folkways reporter Caitlin Tan brings us this story.
Carrie Namlick lives in Shepherdstown with her husband and two daughters. She's an assistant professor for Blue Ridge Community and Technical College and is working from home because of the pandemic. But like many parents, she's also found herself homeschooling her two girls, Scarlett and Lila. She's been using baking as a way to implement some math.
Okay, so then I split up our flour here because we have a half of a cup in each one and the recipe calls for a cup.
But also just to practice old school kitchen skills.
What are we making today?
We're making popovers!
Those are flaky light rolls that are an American adaptation of England's Yorkshire pudding, a recipe that dates back to the 17th century. Popovers are made with eggs.
A little harder. Oh, perfect. There you go.
And butter, milk, salt, and flour.
Good, good. Okay, now mix all that flour into it.
It looks so yucky.
It looks yucky.
I know, it looks like hard milk.
Hard milk.
Hard milk.
Well, it'll be yummy once you mix it all.
Yummy!
Traditionally, Appalachians have relied on baking as a way to provide food for the family. Namlick is a self-taught baker who has baked consistently for the past 10 years, but is leaning on the skill more during the pandemic.
Nobody else is leaving the house except for me whenever I go on those grocery store trips. So the least amount of time that I have to leave, the less likely my family is to be exposed. So yeah, I've been trying to do at least a week and a half or 2 weeks at a time.
Earlier in March, stores were all sold out of bread as people braced for social distancing. But Namlick has now also noticed a shortage of yeast and flour.
Well, right now I'm down to my last bag. I'm hoping at least that means other people are trying to bake their own things now since I can't find it.
And there's truth to that. Online things like isolation loaves and quarantine cookies are trending. And according to Nielsen data, yeast purchases are up 600% in March. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Caitlin Tan.
Have you found yourself returning to homemaking things in this time of social distancing? We'd love to hear from you. Send an email to ctan@wvpublic.org. Free charitable health clinics like West Virginia Health Right play an important role helping those in poverty or those without insurance get access to necessary medical care. But the medical and financial impacts of the coronavirus are putting a large strain on HealthRight and organizations like it. In response to the pandemic, West Virginia HealthRight is now offering testing to our most vulnerable communities at a mobile clinic at Manamill Soup Kitchen in Charleston. Corey Nallinger recently spoke with West Virginia HealthRight CEO and Executive Director, Dr. Angie Settle, about how the organization is adapting in these times.
How has everything that's been kind of going on economically with the coronavirus impacted the amount of people you're seeing?
What we've seen since the COVID-19 pandemic is, of course, an increase in unemployment, more small businesses shuttering their doors. So suddenly a lot of people without income, especially disposable income for things like medications and health care. So we've seen about a 400% increase in demand for medications in our pharmacy. And, supply and demand is real. So a lot of the medications across the country, the prices are skyrocketing. We're able to get some medications through drug programs normally. But even those are limited at this time because of staffing cutbacks at drug companies and things being delayed. So we're having to buy a lot more medications than we typically would.
When I was about to ask, is there any concern about sustainability at this time?
The thing is HealthRight is the kind of the last resort for a lot of people. We are the safety net provider. When people go through other means and they've tried other places and they can't get care, they come to us. So, I feel responsible to make sure that we can take care of those people. I don't want to be the one that closes the door and tells somebody, you can't have that blood pressure medicine or you can't have, cholesterol medicine or your seizure medicine or anything like that. So we're just responding to the needs of the community as they come in. And funding is kind of an afterthought. And we're just hoping, that those that can help us, that'll contribute to the cause because we're all here for each other. trying to help fellow West Virginians in need right now. Down the road, I know there's talk of different federal programs and things that can help, but that doesn't, you know, help you in the short term, you know, in the next 30 days when the bills come in. So, you know, I'm not ready to say that now. Of course, we would always, if we have to make tough choices, we would have to make tough choices, but I'm not, definitely not ready to throw in the towel. I'm committed to making this work for our patients.
What are some of the challenges you guys didn't expect in the face of this pandemic that you've kind of seen now?
I don't know that I necessarily foresaw the shuttering of the doors and the huge spike in unemployment connected to this disease. Honestly, I didn't, and probably did not think about the huge increase in drug pricing and costs. You know, gloves, everything you can imagine. We were desperate for some masks about 10 days ago, and I actually found some on Amazon and paid probably twice what I should have, but, you know, we have to take care of our staff. So probably that would be the biggest thing. You know, I realized it was coming and everything, but probably didn't really think about the impact of closing the whole community and having that many people, you know, in need and with loss of income.
And what gives you hope throughout this whole situation? We've seen some pretty incredible things happen across the state, but what has specifically given you hope?
I think what's given me hope is just, you know, just even just looking at my staff and, you know, looking at the medical personnel that are getting up every day, going out there to do this job, putting themselves in harm's way. You know, I know it's hard for people to shelter in place and stay home. But for us that have to get up every day and it's like a, you know, normal day going to work, except for heightened, risk and everything. We do that because we love, you know, we love this state, we love our community, and we love, you know, the professions that we chose. I've just been blessed to see the great attitudes of my staff, you know, right where they're needed. Like I said, we're down there, at Manor Mill, trying to get the homeless screened and tested, you know, and that's a benefit to everybody, you know, unlike those of us that have insurance and have the opportunity and transportation to get to our providers, the homeless don't have that luxury. So we need to make sure that somebody stands in the gap for them and they have access to get the same test that we can get if it's needed. And it benefits everybody that, you know, they're not clogging up the ER just to be tested because they don't have access anywhere else, that we can notify those patients as well and help them self-quarantine and protect, you know, the public as a whole.
And then what can we do as a whole for some of our more vulnerable communities, like those without permanent housing in this time?
We need to keep an eye out for each other. And if you see somebody in distress or whatever, you know, don't ignore them. You need to let somebody know so that we can help each other. But we don't want to be panicked, you know, just using good common sense and keeping an eye out for everybody. And in our organization will be keeping an eye out for those in our community, but there's other communities across the state where people need to, you know, keep an eye out for each other. But we want to be there for them and see them through and make sure that if they, you know, need that next step of hospitalization or whatever, that we're there for them and can help them, you know, do that and get assistance.
That was West Virginia Health Right CEO and Executive Director Angie Settle speaking with reporter Corey Nollinger. Their clinic at Manor Mill is open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. For more information about the West Virginia Health Right, head to their website at wvhealthright.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Brittany Patterson produces our show. Our news director is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.